Hello, everyone, and welcome to another Radical Compliance podcast. I'm Matt Kelly, the editor of Radical Compliance. Today, we're going to talk about immigration issues and how the incoming Trump administration is likely to make that a pressing issue in 2025. The president-elect has been promising mass deportation of undocumented people in the United States. That is not news. We don't know yet exactly how that effort is going to look, but we do know that it could be quite disruptive to businesses that employ undocumented workers who might be doing so knowingly or otherwise, but the reality is what it is. So what should businesses expect next year? What compliance measures should you have in place to avoid undocumented workers or to reduce tensions with immigration authorities that might ask your business about its workforce? Joining us to discuss all of that is Bill Riley from consulting firm Guidepost Solutions. Bill heads the compliance practice there, which includes the firm's immigration and border services practice. Earlier in his career, Bill spent 20 years as a special agent working with U.S. immigration authorities. And by the end of his career, he was a special agent in charge of Homeland Security investigations around the Philadelphia region. So he has an awful lot of experience and perspective here. Bill, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning, Matt. Really appreciate the time and opportunity to speak with you.
Okay, so set the table for us first. What would you expect to see from the Trump administration in, say, the first 12 months or so? And for example, lots of people remember workplace raids like we used to see in the 90s or in the 2000s. Should we be expecting that? Should we be expecting something else? Or what do you think might be coming over the landscape?
Sure. I definitely think a very early focus will be on criminal aliens, those individuals that were convicted of crimes that render them removable from the U.S. A lot of them have been released to the street, either because there wasn't detention space or there was no notification from state and locals. Clearly that criminal alien aspect, as well as national security threats to the U.S., will be the top priority. But as it relates to worksite enforcement, I definitely think you'll see a return to more of a focus on worksite enforcement and I-9 audits in the first 12 months. The operations you referenced in the 1990s and 2000, those large-scale operations, they take many months of investigation and planning. Mm-hmm. So I don't expect to see that right out of the gate with the new administration, but I think some early activities will help build that predication, such as large-scale numbers of I-9 audits, which the numbers have declined over the past few years. I think those will be specifically targeted in some of the industries that you've seen in the history of I-9 and worksite enforcement: agriculture, meat processing, cleaning, maintenance, temporary staffing agencies. Those have been traditionally industries that recent migrants moved to, and that's really where we've seen the bulk of enforcement over the last 30 plus years.
So, in fact, take a step back for us and walk us through who would be the actual enforcement agencies a compliance or HR team would be likely to encounter. Who are the agencies who might turn up on a compliance officer's radar over the next year or two?
Sure. The primary, especially in the interior, is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. That's the overarching agency. Within ICE, there are two major components: HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, and Enforcement and Removal Operations. So HSI is more of the investigative side. They're the ones that primarily focus on the worksite enforcement and I-9 compliance. Mm-hmm. They also focus on criminal investigations related to human smuggling and trafficking, identity and benefit fraud, and transnational gangs. HSI has a whole customs component as well. A lot of missions there, not really the topic of this conversation. Yep. But the other large immigration enforcement piece within ICE is enforcement and removal operations. Their missions focus on criminal aliens, both currently incarcerated as well as on the street. Fugitive operations, those are individuals that have received a final order of removal, but are not currently in custody. They will go out and look for them to put them into, they're done removal proceedings, but basically try to effect the removal from the country. ERO also oversees the immigration detention as well as the physical removal. You know, they are the ones that actually fly them back to the countries when they were ordered to be removed.
Mm-hmm. And unpack for us a bit, what are the types of enforcement actions we might see? You've touched on that earlier, where Maybe workforce raids, but those are more complicated than people might think. You mentioned I-9 audits, which is really more of a paper-based enforcement, but is it that? Is there other enforcement activities that compliance officers should keep in mind? Like, what do you think that, what might they encounter here?
Sure, definitely the I-9 audit and the work site are the ones that impact the HR reps and the businesses the most. They're required, like some compliance programs relate to some companies and not others, such as banking regulation, right? Only banks and designated financial institutions have to have money laundering programs. When you look at I-9 compliance, every company that has an employee has to comply with I-9. So that's a massive, you're talking tens of millions of I-9s out there. So every company that pays a W-2 employee has to have an I-9 for them if they were hired after 1986. So when you look at the scope of that, that's really every employer, right? That's why ICE will focus on certain employers that have more of an issue with potentially unauthorized workers, as well as companies that use a lot of the temporary work visas. So that's definitely front and foremost. However, compliance departments may be contacted when, let's say, ICE ERO has a warrant of removal for someone and they don't find them at their house. They may try to come to the work site and say, "Hey, we have a warrant of removal for this individual. We'd like to speak to them." So that could come in to play as well when it comes to interior enforcement for immigration violations.
So, for all of our listeners who are now quietly muttering, "Oh crap, now I need to assess our immigration compliance program," what steps would that include? What does a company want to demonstrate to show to the immigration authority, "I do have an effective I-9 compliance program, I'm fine"? Like, what are the capabilities they need to have? What's the documentation? What does all that look like?
Sure. So the I-9 is a one now back down to a one-page form. Paper could be electronic. Nowadays, there's a lot of electronic I-9 providers out there. So the first step is the I-9 needs to be correct. That means it needs to have been timely prepared. If it's prepared late, you can't undo the timing. There are very specific rules on when an I-9 needs to be completed. So assess how are your I-9s? I'll call them paper for lack, of saying electronic, but make sure the I-9s are correct. You're accepting only the documentation that meets the legal requirements. For I-9s, it's usually one or a combination of two documents that establish identity and work authorization. That's front and foremost, is make sure your paperwork is accurate. Second, beyond the I-9 itself, documents are presented, and there is a huge industry of fraudulent documents and identity theft out there. While not all employers have that in-house, conducting a fraud assessment within your workforce is helpful as well. So that's looking to see, do I have a document expert? Do I have a document problem? If you're on E-Verify, that could be more identity theft fraud. If you're not on E-Verify, it could be more fake documents. So, having that done is important because your I-9s could be in great shape and you could still have a large number of unauthorized workers in your workforce because of that fraud.
In your observation, where do you see larger companies in particular? Where do you see them struggle or go wrong, such as they think they have the documentation, but it turns out the documents are fake? Or are there other big challenges that you see larger companies repeatedly struggle with?
Yeah, large companies, I think the first piece is on the strict I-9 compliance. A lot of them, especially companies with high turnover, large, disparate operations where, let's say, a local manager is responsible for HR, traditional HR work. They have a problem a lot of times with timeliness. So they'll get around to completing the I-9. The I-9 is very strict. Part of it needs to be done on or before the first day of work. And then the documents need to be presented by the end of the third day after they start. If you're not getting that done in time, those I-9s will be late and you can get a fine for that. And you can't fix lateness, right? You can't undo the clock. Now, if somebody didn't check a box or sign their name or put a date, you can fix that. And if that's corrected, you won't get a fine for it. But certain deficiencies cannot be corrected. That's one of them. The other one is not paying attention to the document and identity fraud issues. Some employers that are on E-Verify, which is a voluntary system other than government contractors, think that because they get a work authorized kind of green light that their workforce is legal. E-Verify does a good job at spotting completely fictitious identities, but is completely vulnerable to when someone uses a US citizen's identity and they present a state ID or driver's license in the name of another person or with their photo on it. There's no photo matching functionality in E-Verify. So employers' over-reliance on a positive E-Verify result is a mistake if they're not doing a fraud assessment as well.
I don't want to go too far down a fraud rabbit hole here, but right away I'm wondering about how much more difficult might this be thanks to AI, and fraudsters are all over the place trying to use AI to make better and better fabricated documents. I could see the challenges of building strong anti-fraud protections here getting harder and harder as the tech to thwart those and cheat their way in, that keeps getting better and better too. Am I pulling on a headache of a thread here?
No, it's a great observation. And even within that, some of the rules and regulations that were passed for Real ID Act have not been implemented, as well as some of them have actually had a negative impact. Some states now, because of Real ID Act, will issue a temporary ID to an individual while they wait for their Real ID to come in the mail. Well, those are a little more than can be created on Adobe or a PDF. And those are valid for I-9 to present for an I-9. So you take AI, you take some of the legal impacts, and you take the fact that a lot of states don't share their data with E-Verify. And yeah, fraud is going to be going through the roof and has continued to go through the roof in the past few years.
You know, another question that had come to me just in the last few minutes while we were talking, I was also wondering, let's say you're the large company, you have in fact gone through your workforce and you've done all of your I-9 inspections and whatnot. What about any risk of changes to immigration at a larger level, such as President Trump says, I'm going to end temporary protected status for these populations? Well, have they then become undocumented now? And like, I'm thinking through the monitoring that must go on at a large company to make sure not just that you have an understanding of it today, but you're able to detect immigration or undocumented worker risks that might change over time, because this is such a big, convoluted piece of law and public policy. Like, what are the issues there?
Right. That's a great point. And it's probably the question we're being asked the most these days is what do I need to do? Many of these workers, you hit on TPS. DACA is another category that, was passed through executive order that these individuals, and it's a large workforce, are on temporary work authorization. So the employer is required by law as part of their compliance program that they have to re-verify their work authorization as it's coming up for expiration. You can't wait until afterward because there is no gray area. They have to re-verify prior to expiration. What we've been telling employers is, as best you can, in a non-discriminatory way, start identifying, especially if you have a large number of temporary workers in there, what programs they are getting their work authorization under. So TPS, they have certain codes on their work authorization documents to tell you what it is based on country. DACA has a specific code, but get an understanding, and that's going through your I-9s. If you kept copies of them, of the work authorization cards, you can get an understanding of what your workforce makeup is, not for use in any other way, but for preparing in case word is out that, let's say, the administration is going to cancel or, not extend Haitian TPS. You'll know how many workers will be impacted. Now, you may not be able to help that worker, but at least from an operational standpoint and a compliance standpoint, you know what that impact will be to your current workforce.
Now, the last couple of questions I had were more about how the rest of the workforce you have might interact with some of these, very sensitive and sometimes divisive issues. So, for example, I could imagine some employees might call the internal hotline to raise concerns about workers they suspect that their documentation is false, or maybe those same workers don't even call your internal hotline, they call the immigration authorities directly. Can you tell us a little bit about, I don't know how often that might happen, or what are some of the issues or concerns that companies should think through to make sure if that happens, they know what to expect or they know how to manage it? What would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we help assess all different kinds of compliance programs, one of a good tool is having a tip line, right? You pointed out that that is part of a traditional compliance framework. So having that, it doesn't need to be, a software solution or a third-party provider. But when you get tips as an employer, you need to take them seriously and investigate them best you can. And it starts with really, what is the allegation? And I'll get into two common ones that we see, both from an employer standpoint and also when I was an agent. The allegation is, well, they speak Spanish. That's how I know that they're not documented. Well, that really doesn't really pass the threshold, especially when I was on the government side. But look into the allegation. What are they alleging? Because a different kind of allegation would be, well, this employee, I believe, is unauthorized to work because he goes by Bill Riley at work, but outside of work, he goes by John Doe. That's not a nickname. That's a completely different identity. That has a little more substance to the allegation. But employers should take them all seriously. Allegations come in from other ways. Social Security mismatch notices, complaints from the general public. Hey, I got a W-2 form that says I'm working at your plant. I don't work at your plant. Taking those allegations, investigating them fully, and documenting the results of the investigation. You may not be able to come to a conclusion or the conclusion that the allegation relates to, but do your best effort with the tools you have, with the knowledge you have, and ensure that your I-9 is completed properly. If you interview the employee, certain things can come up. If they admit that they're not authorized to work, there's no decision there. You must terminate, right? You don't want to continue to employ someone after knowing that. As far as contacting, the authorities, definitely as an employer, you don't d discourage that if they have an allegation. I would say from an employer standpoint, if the allegation falls on management side, one, if it's a threat to public safety or national security, absolutely immediately report it. Otherwise, if it's something that is not pressing, you definitely want to consult with your in-house counsel or external counsel or a consultant prior to any kind of disclosure.
So now, what about the opposite scenario where a perfectly legal, documented coworker is thinking, well, Julio from Venezuela or this other employee from Africa, like they seem like a nice guy. I don't want to see him get deported. I'm just going to recommend that he not come in tomorrow because I think there's a raid, or I'm going to leave the back door open in case something happens and he can make a speedy exit. Like I could see that happening as well. And now what sort of can of worms have opened up?
Sure. I'll put this out in very plain terms. Tipping off, aiding and abetting, those are criminal violations. You could end up getting yourself into a lot of hot water by aiding and abetting, harboring, transporting in furtherance. These are all criminal violations that you can get prosecuted for. Employers that knowingly hire more than 10 or more workers in a 12-month period is a criminal violation. So right off the bat, there's definitely some really hardened criminal violations that you could be stepping into by assisting someone if you have knowledge or definitely helping them evade the authorities. From an employer standpoint, there's also civil penalties. If your I-9s are not in compliance, those are civil penalties. Knowingly hiring or knowingly continue to employ, which could mean their employment authorization expired, let's say the TPS is canceled. If you know that their work authorization expired and you did not re-verify them, you can get hit for knowingly continue to employ. Those violations run thousands of dollars per worker. And if you're a federal contractor, that can debar you from federal contracts in the future. Put this one out there as well. When I mentioned an employee admits to maybe using fake documents, we always recommend an employers give them an opportunity because they may come back and say, I used these fake documents when I was first hired. I actually got status, legal status since then. You can keep an employee on the books. There are certain procedures to follow. So always be cautious. Always, provide the employee the opportunity if there's an allegation or if you feel documents are fake. At times, immigration status can be somewhat fluid. Let's say they married a citizen and they're able to obtain status through that way. They may not have reported it to you right away. It really depends on your internal, ethics and code of conduct if you can allow that. But the government does allow that in certain occasions. But what it also doesn't do is it doesn't undo that individual's liability for potentially having fake documents or stealing or misusing an identity. Those are criminal violations as well. But from an employer standpoint, there are some avenues in which you can allow an employee to stay employed if they do have legal work authorization under their own name.
All right. Any other final advice before we close today, Bill?
I would say it's not too late to assess your I-9 compliance framework. Do it sooner rather than later. It's easier to fix problems when you're on your own timeline. Because if my old agency comes out, if you're under audit or under investigation, you really do lose control of your timeline and how much and how well you can remediate any problems that are identified.
Well, Bill, that's all the time we have, but you covered a lot of ground for us today. Very thoughtful conversation. Thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for the opportunity, Matt.
And again, everybody, that was Bill Riley, head of the compliance practice at Guidepost Solutions, joining us today to talk about immigration enforcement and the compliance issues that companies should keep top of mind as the Trump administration prepares to arrive. That is all for this podcast. I'm your host, Matt Kelly. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next time.